Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
Today is Tuesday, December the 7th, 2021. I have the honor of interviewing James Hugo Riffenbach, veteran of the United States Army. He enlisted in the Army February 1970, and his contract, I'm going to say, ended as a Spec 4. We are at the Midwest Genealogy Center in Independence, Missouri. My veteran, his full name is James Hugo Riffenbach. He was born July 7th, 1949, to John Thomas Riffenbach and Elsa Catherine Carlson in Kansas City, Missouri. We'd like to start this interview, and I would like to start with the question, where you were born, you said Kansas City, Missouri, that's where you grew up. Can you tell me a little bit about what your parents were like at the time growing up, Hugo?
Dad worked for Folgers Coffee Company. He was up at 6 o'clock every morning and at work by 7 and came home every night by about 4:30 or 5. And mom was a stay-at-home mom after my brother was born, and she was active in PTA and church and things like that. To clarify, though, I volunteered for the draft because at the first lottery, my birth date came up 13th, and I knew as soon as I graduated from UMKC, I would be drafted. So I went ahead and volunteered for the draft.
Since you went there, Hugo, I'm going to go ahead and continue on, if you don't mind, with your military service.
Sure.
You indicated you went ahead and enlisted. So which branch of the service? Would you repeat that again?
The Army.
Okay. And you said you got drafted because they had pulled the lottery, had pulled your number?
Right. It was number 13, and by surrendering my student deferment card, I received a 1A card, which meant I was eligible to be drafted. And I got drafted about a month and a half after I did that. So, and then I reported to Fort Leonard Wood.
Okay. Did you fight in a war?
I was stationed in the combat zone of Vietnam, but I didn't do any actual fighting. I was under a mortar attack at one time, and that was about it.
Mm-hmm. What were your responsibilities? What was your experience like? What duties did you have?
I photographed just everything that needed to be photographed, from four-star generals down to privates. I photographed a former POW that had been captured by the VC. He was held for many, many months, and they finally told him to leave, and he walked until he ran into a U.S. unit. He was suffering from malaria, malnutrition, and other illnesses after being captive for so long. And one of the high-ranking, either major or general, was presenting him with a Purple Heart and a couple other medals at the hospital on Long Bend.
Were you requested to photograph that as well?
No, I actually saw some people that I didn't know with cameras, and so I figured that something was going to happen. So I went back and I got my 4x5 press camera and went back, and while he was being pinned with the different medals, I took pictures of that along with the two other guys were, I think, with one of the military newspapers.
Do you know if he made it home?
I don't. Okay. He was barely conscious when I was there in the hospital. So hopefully he did.
Okay. From hearing your previous sharing of picture taking, I'm assuming you were never injured while you were there in Vietnam.
I was, but it wasn't because of a hostility. I had reported for guard duty one night, and there was a box of ammunition for the M60, and not knowing how much it weighed, I tried to pick it up myself, and that night on guard duty, I felt like a kidney or something was going to come out my back. And it has gotten progressively worse, I need to talk to the VA about it some more.
Yes, definitely. Do you have any regrets joining the service? Anything that took place while you were in the service? Any regrets?
Not really. I was stationed at Fort Leonard Wood for 6 months in the photo lab, and then I went to Vietnam, and I don't have any regrets. In fact, later on, I joined the Kansas National Guard and went through medic training with them, mm-hmm. and fully enjoyed that.
So you finished your tour as far as your enlistment with the Army, and then you got out of there, then you got back home, then you turn around and join the National Guard.
Several years later. I was 40 years old, and I just barely made it because of my prior service. Mm-hmm. And then they sent me down to Fort Sam to go through medic training. And I thoroughly enjoyed that.
Why did you find a calling to go to the National Guard? What was calling you when you saw the National Guard?
I had lost about 70 pounds. And my wife and daughter and I were out shopping, and there was a National Guard unit set up at the mall. And I went over to talk to him, and on the way home, my wife said, well, why don't you join them and, you know, see if you like, you know, would like it. And so I talked to the guard recruiter, and I said, you know, I'm a photographer and, you know, and that. And he said, well, we're a tank unit. We need either tankers or medics. And I thought, well, my daughter is young. She's going to need a lot of bandages for scrapes and stuff like that. So medic training would help out. So that's what I signed up for. And then I extended it for a year so I could go down to Fort Sam Houston and go through medic training. And thoroughly enjoyed that.
Good. Let's back up just a bit. We're still talking about your military service.
Okay.
What was it like coming home after your enlistment, being in the service?
On the way home, we stopped in Alaska, and the civilians working at the airport refused to give us change so that we could use the restrooms that were paid stalls and all. And the MPs kept barking at us about, you know, tucking in our jungle shirts, which were never meant to be tucked in. When we got to Oakland Army Base, everything went well. After I left there, no civilian said anything to me about anything. When I went back to college, nobody said a word, you know. It was like I wasn't even there. I mean, wasn't even in front of them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people pretty much were over the war by then.
Okay. So I know the answer to this question, but I want to extend it a little bit further. Are you active with any military groups? And if so, what are they?
It's a writing group that I'm active with, and I've been fortunate that we've had Zoom meetings because I live down in Texas, and it's good to still be connected with the folks in that group, and I thoroughly enjoy that.
Good. Do you keep in touch with any friends from your service-related time, Hugo?
No. One of the fellows that I spent a lot of time with was still in Vietnam when I left, and I've only talked to a couple of the fellows that were in our unit, but I haven't gone to any,
reunions?
Yeah, reunions.
Okay. What words of wisdom would you like future generations to know about military service?
Basically, do what you're told and enjoy the opportunity to serve it's worthwhile to be a part of the military.
Okay. Is there anything else relating to your military service that you'd like to add that we didn't ask in any of these questions? Is there any moment during the time you were serving that you'd like to have it documented for future generations to listen to this audio?
Not really. Nothing that I can think of offhand.
And if you do, let me know that you would like to. We'll go ahead and work our way back again.
Okay.
We had asked about growing up. You shared with me your parents growing up. Mm-hmm. I know that you've told me earlier you did have a older brother that your mother was a stay-at-home mom. What was it like growing up with your brother?
He was very studious, and he was 2 years ahead of me in school. So generally, if I had the same teacher that he had, I was told that they expected my work to be as good as his work. And especially the chemistry teacher said that, you know, she really wanted my work to be as good as John's. And I forget what John's semester project was. Mine was telling the class how to make beer. So, you know.
That still takes some chemistry. Okay. What did you think life would be like when you got older as a young man? Your brother was being compared. You were being compared as your teachers. What did you think as far as following?
I really didn't think that far ahead. I basically took life one day at a time and, didn't worry about what was going to come up down the road. Like the first Vietnam lottery, I knew that my birthday was going to come up, the 200th one drawn, and I got home late. They had already started, and I found my birth date number 13. So the next day I went down and turned in my student deferment card and took their 1A, and I just took things as they came.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that leads me to another question. We talked about you going ahead and going down and turning in your deferment card. Mm-hmm. How did your parents feel about you being drafted and your older brother, John, was going to miss it, but their younger child was being drafted, so you turned in?
John was already out of college. He had majored in chemistry, and he had a job with Gulf Oil, or Gulf Research in Kansas City. And my dad was suffering from Alzheimer's, and he was bedridden in our living room. So John was there to help Mom, and I was at a point in school where I didn't really know what I wanted to do next. So it was kind of a good bridge for me to cross, to give me time to think about what I wanted to do. And while in Vietnam, I enjoyed reading, which I didn't previously, and when I came back and went back to UMKC, I was ready to learn and ready to go through literature classes and creative writing classes, where 2 years earlier, I had no clue what I wanted to do.
Well, that leads me right into the next question area. I know that we had talked earlier, because we both belong to the same writing group, mm-hmm. that you like to write poetry. Mm-hmm. And you said you have been writing for a very long time. Were some of these poems that you created, were they all part of your growing up, part of being in the service? Can you tell me a little bit about how or what you write when you write poems?
It's just, I think having a photographic background, I look at things differently. One example is down in Mexico, there's a large chapel, and behind the chapel is a cemetery with a lot of above ground stones, and I could see how the wind and rain had sanded some of the information off. And also there was a wooden fence, 6-foot fence there. The door was dried and broken, and it was hanging open, and through the doorway there were clotheslines were going back and forth, and on the clothesline was a camisole that was green and a slip that was a pinkish color. And so I wrote a poem about that, and I said that the slip was the color of a young girl's blush, and the green camisole was the color of a prickly pear, and they were sashaying in the wind, and brought a lot of good comments from people that heard that poem read. Mm-hmm. So,
what was the happiest moment of your life, and what was the saddest?
Probably the happiest would have been when our daughter was born, and she was born without a cleft palate and a split lip like I was born. And I was very overjoyed to see that, and she is a very beautiful young woman. The saddest moment was having to put down one of my best favorite dogs that had basically protected my mom in our house while I was in the Army. So.
And what was this pet's name?
Che.
Che, like the letter J?
No, Che, like Che Guevara.
Oh, okay. Who was the biggest influence on your life?
Probably, to get me on the path that I'm on, Dan Jaffe, who was a professor at UMKC. He had published many poetry books. He was Jewish and taught me a lot about the Jewish religion. You had to have pretty thick skin to go through some of his critiques. If you didn't, you probably were crying. But he was just a super professor. He taught a lot about what the Jews went through at the concentration camps, and I was just very glad to have known him.
So this is where a lot of your writing comes from.
Yes, yes.
It's been said that after they pass away, the most important people in our lives live within us. Is there anyone in your past that lives within you?
I would say Dan. I can still see him at class, and it was actually him that there was going to be a poetry reading at Park College, and it was just colder than all get out, and the two poets that were going to read, one was I can't remember his name, but the other one was, and unfortunately my mind, I can't remember the names, but I went there and listened to the readings, and lo and behold, Dan was there that night, and it was nice to reconnect with him. And then the poets that read went ahead and started the writing group out at one of the churches in Overland Park.
Okay. What are the most important lessons you've learned in life?
Probably following rules. And, setting goals for yourself and achieving the goals.
So that leads me to the next question. Are there any words of wisdom you'd like to pass along?
just, you know, follow instructions and, you know, if you have questions, ask them. It never hurts to ask a question. You might get laughed at, but still, you know, it's a good thing to do.
Yes. How would you like to be remembered, Hugo?
You know, I really haven't thought of that very much, but I would like people to feel that they were glad knowing me. I know there are people that don't. So, but, you know, it's just stop and think about some of the things that you're doing and whether you like them or want to do something else. Don't be afraid to try something else.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about your family heritage. What is your ethnic background?
Mom's parents were came over from Sweden. Her mom was about 18 when she booked passage from Stockholm to England to New York. And then her husband had come over previously, and the story goes that at Ellis Island, they told him there were too many Andersons, and they changed his name to Carlson. And Kansas City had a fairly large Swedish following, and so he joined that, and then when mom's mom got to Kansas City, she joined it also, joined the lodge, and that's where they met. And so they were told by the Kansas City school system that Swedish would not be taught in or spoken in the house, that they would speak English. So
your father is of the same ethnic background?
No. His mom was from Ireland. I'm not sure which northern or which Ireland. His dad, I have no clue where he was from because they never talked about him. He did time in prison for some of the things he did to his kids. And the first photograph I saw of him was from the Kansas Prison Bureau.
Okay. What traditions have been passed down to you and your family growing up, do you remember?
In mom's family, we always had Swedish dinners for Christmas and New Year's. And that was the only time that a Swedish prayer was said. And we really didn't learn any Swedish from our mom or her sister. But we still, you know, are glad we know where they came from. So
that leads me to the next question. Have you ever traveled to the place where your grandparents or parents were born?
No. I originally wanted to go to Sweden when I was in Europe, and it had become so expensive to travel there, and I had met a young lady before I left, and my whole reason for going to Europe was a Jewish clerk at Fort Leonard Wood. He made a joke about me putting down that I had no religious preference. And he said I should have put down Jewish so I could get their holidays off and the Christian holidays off. And that kind of broke the ice. And he listened to my photographic background, and he wrote all of it down, and I ended up becoming an Army photographer. And so when I had the money, I went to Europe and went to Israel, where I said a prayer at the West Wall in Jerusalem. And I kind of wanted to go to Sweden, but when I talked to my girlfriend, who's now my wife, I decided to cut the trip short and go home about a month early. So, and Sweden, like I said, was just really expensive at that time. Mm-hmm. So,
I'd like to go back to your military service, because there are a few more questions that I feel need to be asked, if you will indulge me. During your service, can you recall times when you were afraid?
There were. It wasn't because of the enemy. It was because it was New Year's and somebody got drunk and started firing M60 off in our company area. Fortunately, all the shells went over and nobody was hurt. But I did go through one mortar attack one night where a fellow was killed. And that was very, very unsettling. It was one of those, he was going to leave the next day to go home, and he didn't make it.
How would you say the war changed you, Hugo?
There are times when loud noises bother me. And it doesn't help that I worked about 20 years in banking and went through two bank robberies, one having a pistol in the back of my head and black and blue marks all down my back. You know, I kind of think about that. And then the New Year's Eve of going from 1999 to 20, a bank was robbed, and it was a 6 or 7 hour standoff, and it was on the television all night long. And I knew some of the workers in the bank, and one girl was very negatively affected by that.
During this time period when you were in the service and you were in Vietnam, what lessons did you learn from this time in your life?
As far as lessons, what I learned was to enjoy reading. I was a very slow reader, and to the point where in scouting, for one Christmas, I was given some sort of a toy, and I traded it with somebody that had a book about Roy Rogers. And when I showed it to my mom, I was really happy. with that, and she made the comment that I would never read it, and so I never read it. And fortunately, being in Vietnam, I learned to enjoy reading, and I don't know how many books I've read, but I really enjoy it.
I've given you the opportunity, Hugo, to read all of these Tell Me a Story sample questions. Mm-hmm. And I know there's many more that I could ask, but are there any, as you review them, are there any that you'd like to include them before I choose a few more? Because we've got about several more minutes. Okay. That I'd like to make this a full 45 minutes. So okay. If you would pause and take a moment to look that over and see if there's one that you'd like, or two that you'd like to answer.
The one question about the happiest moment of my life, mm-hmm. would be when our daughter was born. I was having a hard time getting into the paper costume that I had to, you know, put on before I went into the birthing room. And so I barely got in, and when our daughter was born, I kept looking to see if she had the cleft palate and lip that I have, and I kept asking the nurses to check her out to make sure she was okay. And when they said that she was okay, didn't have it, I was extremely happy for that, and because working at a bank, I had some mothers ask me about the palate and lip, and they wanted to know if their daughters could come in and talk to me, and I said sure, but unfortunately none of them came in. And I'm just fortunate that Dad worked for the company that he worked for that had good insurance, and they were able to get good plastic surgeons, and I have seen people in other countries that haven't been so lucky, and I just think that in America we take for granted things like that we shouldn't take for granted.
Is there any other area before I ask the one question that we still haven't covered?
No, not that I can think of.
You mentioned towards the end of this interview about scouting. Were you a scout at one time, or became
Boy Scout?
Yes.
Yeah. Both my brother and I were in Cub Scouts, and then we were in Boy Scouts. Our dad was really great. He would go camping when the troop went camping. It was a good thing to belong to. We both got our Eagle Scout rank. John was more into it than what I was, and it was fun to go out camping and all. I really enjoyed that, but I got tired of some of the attitudes that I saw down at scout camp, and I stopped attending those, and I worked for 4 years at a Presbyterian camp, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. The attitude was completely different, and that's where I met a girl whose mom was pretty important in getting me a job in photography, where I was able to buy more photographic equipment and use that on my resume when I went into the Army. So it was very beneficial, and I love being out at the camp, and it was co-ed. It was just great. I mean, really, really fun. I worked both washing dishes at first and then as a lifeguard. And I wouldn't trade those times for anything.
So I want to thank you, Hugo. I really enjoyed this interview. Learned a lot again about a veteran.
Thank you.
The life you've had is very full. And you still have a lot of time left to make it even fuller.
Yeah.
I do appreciate that.
Thank you. I enjoyed this, and I went over these questions several times.
And would you share that with the writing group? Because there's several others.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.